welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour, PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Paul Craig Roberts. It's been a while, Paul, since I had you on last, and indeed I missed your important comments. I follow your writing, your articles, your important ideas that you let people know about, important stuff that everybody should read and follow and understand and tell others about it. The time I was away, the world hasn't stood still in the time I was away, Paul. The horrors continue without end, and they certainly, it just pained me that I couldn't add my voice to yours and others writing about the genocide in Gaza, the continual war going on in southeastern Ukraine, and the other horrors, of course, what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri, that is just an example, one example of America's war on its most vulnerable people, blacks, Latinos, ethnic people, anybody who's vulnerable in America. Only the elite are well-served in America. Everybody else is subject to any kind of abuse this country wants to commit against them on a federal, state, and local level. Paul, again, it's great having you on. Let me let you jump in and comment on some of the stuff you've been writing about.
Oh, Stephen, thank you. It's wonderful to have your program back on there and to see you recovered. You know,
I'm doing well, Paul. I'm doing well. I think I feel a little bit better each day.
Oh, that's just terrific. You know, what you said is quite on the mark. About the only people who are exempt from American government violence are a handful of mega-rich Wall Street types and military security complex types. The Israeli government and the governments of the American puppet states in Europe, Japan, Canada, and Australia. Everybody else is under threat of attack. The police routinely kill white people, not just blacks. They routinely abuse their power against everybody they encounter. And military arm of Washington doesn't limit itself to killing Muslims, but it also is involved in the slaughter of the Russian population in eastern and southern Ukraine. And it supplies the weapons that the Israelis use against the Palestinians. So what the United States appears to have become is just one vast murder machine.
Oh, indeed so, Paul. That is, I quoted a couple of comments that you, I think on one of your articles you called America a killing machine. Well, a killing machine, a murder machine, and I mentioned your comment in one of my articles. Yeah, it is a murder machine. It's that at home, it is abroad, and I mean, we see what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri, but I mean, this stuff goes on in Chicago, goes on in big cities and small towns, it's in rural areas, it's in urban areas, it's all over the place besides what goes on overseas, what America does to so many other countries and support some of the world's worst dictators and responsible for so much barbarism on a global scale. It's shocking and disgusting. I don't think any nation has less right to call itself a democracy than America does.
Yeah, there's no accountability for government or police. There are reports all over the internet citing U.S. Department of Justice statistics that American police kill at least 500 Americans every year, and fewer of whom are ever posing a threat to police. Now, that's more than one killing a day. And indeed, within a few days of the Ferguson killing of Mike Brown, we at least have reports of two others. In Walmart, a black guy picked up a toy gun off the shelf in the toy section and was shot down by the police. And less than 4 miles from Ferguson 2 days ago, Tuesday, another black man was shot down in the street, and the police claimed he was a threat, but the video that the police released clearly showed totally contradictory evidence to what the police had said. So it is a routine thing. more than one murder a day by the police. Indeed, a number of sites have made the point that the police in the United States killed more Americans during the course of the Iraq War than we lost troops in combat. So clearly, the police are a threat. Many people stress the racist aspect. I think that there's no doubt that there is racism, but that the threat is elevated now beyond that. It is the threat that comes from the militarization of the police and from their training that teaches them to regard the public as a threat, and that the safest course for the police to follow for their own safety is violence. Apply violence and you will be safe. In other words, the police are no longer there to protect the public. They're there to protect the police from the public. And I think that's what we see in these cases. Anything that could be misinterpreted as a threat, a guy who picked up a toy gun from the shelf in Walmart, apparently he was going to buy it for his kids, he gets gunned down. A black 13-year-old kid walking along the street with a toy rifle, he gets gunned down. Michael Brown in Ferguson gets gunned down. It's endless. It's just endless.
It really is endless, Paul. In early 2009, I wrote about the case of Oscar Grant in Oakland, California. Oakland, California transit officer thrust him face down on the ground, shot him in the back, and executed him. Surprisingly, the officer was convicted of involuntary manslaughter. Of course, it was first-degree murder, no question about that. And I wrote an article on police brutality in America a couple of days ago, and I wrote about the case of Amadou Diallo in New York in February 1999. New York cops fired at him 41 times. The guy was standing harmless in the vestibule of his apartment building. 19 of the 41 shots hit him and, of course, killed him. And in 2006, I wrote about the case of New York cops killing Sean Bell in cold blood on the eve of his wedding, Paul. They fired dozens of times at him as he was coming out of a nightclub. He was celebrating. He was unarmed. He threatened no one. And for whatever reason, he was executed in cold blood. And this is the kind of stuff that repeats over and over again. And are the cops held accountable? No. The exceptions prove the rule. Cops can get away with cold-blooded murder, and about the only thing that happens to them is they get assigned desk duty for a while. Then they can go back out in the street and murder again.
That's right, Stephen. If you were going to cover all of them, you would have to write more than one column per day about police murders.
I need about a dozen books to cover them all, Paul.
Yeah. But you see, it goes the next step is, like you say, seldom is there any accountability. It's rare. Think about the Ferguson case. Generally what happens is the police produce a report that clears the police officer or officers, and the prosecutor then refuses to prosecute. But let's assume that all the publicity requires that the prosecutor bring charges against this policeman. If he's tried in Ferguson, we know there will be white people on the jury, and quite apart from whether they are racist or not. Essentially, they cannot vote to convict the policeman, regardless of the evidence, because if they do, their life in Ferguson becomes impossible. They can't possibly align themselves with what is called a black thug who stole cigars against the white policeman and continue to live in the white community in Ferguson without being ostracized, bullied, threatened, or even set up by the police. So it's impossible, essentially, for people, unless they are of the strongest kind of character and integrity and will pay any price to do the right thing, which very few people have that kind of strength, it's impossible to get a conviction there. So now if the feds bring in a federal charge and they move the trial to some other jurisdiction, it's more likely that the jurors would consider the facts, but still you would have the element of racism. So it's very hard to get justice in these cases, and particularly when so many white people have the fear of blacks and black crime, just as the government used fear of Muslim terrorists to take away our civil liberties. The fear of crime makes white people almost unable to deliver justice to blacks in cases where they have been abused or murdered. So threats become, they make people powerless to exercise a moral decision based on facts. So fear becomes, in the end, the most powerful obstruction of justice that there is.
Oh, it really is so, Paul. I live in a pretty decent part of downtown Chicago, and cops wouldn't harass or bother, let alone shoot anybody in the area where I live. But I could walk if I had the strength to do it. I will, again, if I go a mile from where I live, just head due west, and you'll get into neighborhoods where the cops can run wild, and they can do anything they want to the people who live there, black people, Latino people, poor people overall. And literally, again, I mean, they have a license to kill, and Chicago cops are brutal. I know a couple of people who've been brutalized by Chicago cops, and I mean, they tell horror stories about the stuff that cops do to them personally in their neighborhoods, and this stuff goes on all the time. But it's not just Chicago, a big city, or Ferguson, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis, or just a rural area. I mean, this is an epidemic across America, and it goes on. It's gone on for many, many years. You could give it any name you want. You could call it a new form of Jim Crow. I mean, we had slavery of the 19th century. We had Jim Crow that followed it. You could call this a new Jim Crow. And part of the new Jim Crow is putting hundreds of thousands of black and Latino people in prison who don't belong there. Don't belong there for nonviolent offenses, most of them drug possession or drug-related charges. They're not big-time drug dealers, but the drug laws are structured to harm black and Latino people as opposed to white people. And again, America has 2.3 or 2.4 million people in its prison system, a bigger prison system than China with four times the population. And this is a horror. You never see or read anything about this in the news. And who are the people in there? Most of them are blacks and Latinos, poor people. It's an instrument of social control. It's an instrument of repression as well. And again, it's a topic that never comes up. It was one of the first articles I wrote, Paul, about America's gulag prison system. And indeed, it is a gulag prison system.
Well, I certainly agree that racial minorities, as they're called, suffer disproportionately, but the system is not fair to anyone. I mean, just remember the recent case of Cicely McMillan, the white young woman who was an Occupy protester, who was seized from behind. Her breasts were seized from behind by a goon thug cop. And as she turned instinctively, her elbow came up and it struck the cop. So she was arrested for assaulting a police officer. Mm-hmm. And sent to prison. She was imprisoned for responding reflexively to physical sexual assault by a cop. And in her trial, the judge and the prosecutor teamed up and ruled out of order all evidence presented in her behalf. No medical evidence was allowed to be presented of the bruises on her breasts. No evidence was allowed to be presented that the goon thug who had seized her had a record of abusing his authority and abusing the public. and they railroad, and she's white. And it happens to white people, too. It even happens to rich white people. I wrote extensively about the case of Michael Milken, the so-called junk bond king, who was framed up by Giuliani. If you talk to people, even well-informed people in the United States, they all think he was guilty of insider trading. He wasn't even charged with insider trading. He was really not charged with anything. Giuliani kept releasing claims that he had a 98-count indictment. He was trying to force Giuliani into a plea bargain. And then when nothing would happen, he said, well, he has a 300-count indictment. These indictments were never shown to anybody. And in the end, Giuliani's lawyer said, look, Milken's lawyer said, look, Giuliani is out on a limb. He's got to get a conviction. They're already going after your brother and your grandfather. And if you don't let us negotiate a plea bargain, they're going to go after your wife. So let us negotiate. We'll get some minor plea bargain. You'll get a slap on the wrist. And otherwise, your whole family is going to end up indicted because that's the way the criminal system works.
Oh, it should.
Now, this is a Jewish, white Jewish billionaire. And he's getting the same treatment Michael Brown. They're going to exterminate him if they possibly can with false charges, piled on charges, threatening to indict his brother, intimidating his grandfather. And the lawyer he had, former prosecuting attorney for the Securities and Exchange Commission, said, look, I'll work out a deal. So he works out a deal, and Milken agrees to six minor things. There aren't in any indictment, just in order to give Giuliani the appearance of a victory so he'll lay off. And they get this judge, and she double-crosses him and sentences him to jail. Now, the same setup happened to Martha Stewart. She was a multimillionaire worth $200 or $300 million, a white woman. The same thing happened to Leona Helmsley, who they demonized as the white bitch and so on. She was set up and convicted on the basis of the perjured testimony of an accountant that the cops had a case against, a totally different case, and said, we'll let you off if you'll testify against Leona Helmsley. So I investigated all these things. So the lack of justice is not limited to blacks. Anybody that they go after doesn't get a honest shake.
Well, I absolutely do agree with you. And the case that strikes home for me most, I think, is Lynn Stewart, this heroic human rights lawyer, lost her license to practice law. I had a trial rigged against 30 years of doing humanitarian legal work for people who couldn't afford an advocate like her. And she would do it on any pro bono if she had to defend people that maybe other lawyers wouldn't touch or who would never get justice without an advocate like her. And they rigged the case against her, and they charged her effectively with doing her job and representing the wrong client, a blind sheik that the government wanted to convict, and they rigged the case against him to get it convicted. She came in on the appeal, and Ramsey Clark, former attorney general, was part of the team that was defending this guy, and they rigged the case against Lynn, and they gave her initially 16 months, then they upped it to 10 years because the appeals court was unhappy about a low sentence. Well, Lynn has cancer. I don't know what her health situation is right now. Stage 4 cancer, very serious stuff. And I don't know, I mean, she may not have that many more months to live, but they finally let her out the end of last year. And why they did that, I'm very surprised. But if there is anybody who should have been honored and had a statue built for in New York, it was Lynn Stewart. And instead, they put her in prison for 10 years. So
yeah, I
agree with you, Paul. Lynn is very much white.
Yeah, I wrote about that case at length. In fact, the only reason she had that case was that the Justice Department asked her to take it. So, in effect, she was doing them a favor by representing this guy. And then they used the fact that she used the attorney-client privilege, which is her duty, when the prosecutor wrote her a letter and said, no, you can't represent your client in these form, in this way, that way, and this way. And, of course, what the prosecutor's letter said is not in compliance with the law and is not itself a law. But they convicted her for not obeying a prosecutor's letter as if it was a law on the books. But these things are common. Let's take also the case of the Alabama governor, the white governor of Alabama, Seligman.
Paul, can I just mention one thing before you get to the Alabama governor? Ramsey Clark, who was part of the defense team for the blind sheik, did exactly the same thing as Lynn Stewart, and they didn't lay a glove on him.
Well, he's a former attorney general.
Former attorney general, of course.
And even a more famous person.
But yes. Indeed. And a guy on the right side of the issues like you are. I'm surprised they didn't go after him, but they didn't. Anyway, the Alabama governor.
Well, you know, he was a very popular governor. He was improving the school system. And he was framed up by Karl Rove and a corrupt Republican U.S. attorney and a corrupt Republican judge. And he was completely framed up, and people who were part of the frame-up have come forward and said that he was framed up. And I think something like 150 state attorney generals, you know, present and former, signed a document that this man did not do anything wrong and was framed and wrongfully convicted by a corrupt Republican court system in Alabama, and he should be released and so forth. And Obama won't do anything. And Seligman is a Democrat, and the Democrats have not raised a finger in his defense. They've simply let the corrupt Republicans frame up one of their popular governors in the South, which. And the Democrats are making a comeback from the Republican racist control of the South. And Obama's done nothing whatsoever. He could very easily pardon the guy, or he could actually send the Justice Department down, arrest that federal judge, arrest that U.S. attorney, and put them on trial because they were criminals, and what they did was criminal. And yet he's done nothing. Nothing happens. So here's a white Democratic governor. And he has no protection of law or no protection even from his own political party.
Former governor of my state, Governor Ryan, also went through something like that. And Governor Ryan was not the best governor, as I remember, but he did one wonderful thing. He came to the conclusion that a lot of people on death row were there wrongfully, and he literally cleaned out death row and wanted to end the death penalty in Illinois. Another governor, Pat Quinn, the current governor, and the legislature of Illinois finally did end the death penalty in Illinois, but Governor Ryan was the one who initiated the whole thing, and he certainly deserves an awful lot of credit for that. He took a lot of flack, but he did a wonderful thing. But the abuse.
But that's why they went after him. That's why they went after him.
Oh, they went after him. That's right. That's right.
Because he would not execute people who had been wrongly convicted, and when he found out, I think one of the things he did, he saw that something like 40% of people executed were wrongfully convicted. And he said, well, I got to stop this. I can't have them executing framed up victims just simply because the prosecutors want success indicators. You know, the more convictions they get, the more successful they are. That's the way the system works. The police don't bother to do investigations. They just pick somebody up because they know that in most cases it's not going to go to trial and the police evidence is not ever tested. So the whole thing is rotten to a core. And so the governor does the right thing according to the facts, and they go after him and frame him up. Yeah, that's the way it works in America. That is, it is a completely corrupt, every public institution in the United States, and indeed almost all the private ones, are totally corrupt.
If that's not a definition of a police state alone, Paul, I don't know what is. Of course, America can be explained as a police state in a number of ways. Just putting innocent people in prison, sometimes throwing the key away, executing people who murdered nobody. I mean, and of course, what goes on the streets, not just of Ferguson, but on the streets of Chicago, New York, you name it. You name any community in America, and you find horrific abuses against vulnerable people because the cops or the authorities can get away with it over and over again. And America has the nerve to call itself a democracy, some democracy, Paul.
Yeah. Well, even in a small town in Georgia, in Habersham County, where the police broke into the home in the middle of the night, SWAT team, and threw a stun grenade in the baby's crib. The baby was on life support in the hospital for weeks. It was the wrong house. There were three cases of just gross negligence. It was the wrong house. There was no need for a SWAT team. They were just looking for a drug suspect. And, of course, it's negligence to throw a grenade in the baby's crib. So you had three cases. So what happens? The county attorney has just ruled that the county has no liability for the injury to the family and doesn't have to pay the medical bills. That he actually said it would be illegal for the county to pay the family's medical bills for the baby. But the raid on the wrong house that did the damage, oh, that was legal. So this is just a small town. This is not a dangerous city. Wherever people are, they are in danger of the police. The smallest town, anywhere. Stop for a traffic offense. You don't know what's going to happen to you.
It's so true, Paul. We're getting near the end of the program. Police cars in many areas have in their cars or the slogan that they proclaim, serve and protect. What an outrage. You know, they serve and protect the elites of society, and they come after with hammers against most everybody else.
Well, I don't think they do serve and protect the elite. I've told you what happened to the Alabama governor.
The selected elites. Not all the elites, yeah. For sure, Paul, but the selected. You haven't seen anybody lay a glove on George Bush. They certainly take good care of him. I mean, if anybody ought to be in prison, certainly he belongs there, or Dick Cheney and that crowd, and the people in the Obama administration. But they certainly don't do anything to harm them, or the FBI and federal authorities in any form.
Now, if you're in the government, you are above the law. And that's the way America works. The law is no longer a shield of the people. It's a weapon in the hands of the state.
Yeah, it sure is. And, of course, there's so much going on. We didn't get to discuss what's going on in Ukraine. We can do it on a future program. That story is not going away. Or Israel's genocidal war on Gaza. That continues. It didn't surprise me that the talks broke
down.
That's
now, 60 or 70 years old, then?
It really is horrific what goes on. And anybody, I write about this stuff all the time, Paul, but I know full well from my own personal experiences that if you don't experience them yourself, you can't possibly understand what people going through this are experiencing.
Exactly.
You just can't possibly know. What is it like to lose everything that matters most to you, all your possessions, your home, and your family? Who can explain that? Who can put that into words and explain it so people understand it? Paul, I look forward to getting you back again. I'm still doing a little bit of catching up, but I'm doing it and still back into my writing again and media work. I look forward to getting you back on again.
I look forward to talking to you again, Stephen.
Thank you, Paul.
All the best to you.
Thank you very much.